Now, I believe in having the cake and eating it because, you know, that is the point. But I guess eating too much cake and then if you wash it down with soft drink can lead to diabetes or worse. The George Institute for Global Health in Sydney wants Australia to introduce a tax on sugary drinks, or they want the government to order a cut in the amount of sugar going into drinks. Professor Bruce Neal is with the George Institute. Bruce, welcome. Look, is it fair to tax those who just want to quench their thirst with a soft drink?
The reason that we would argue for a sugar tax, and specifically for a tax on sugary drinks, is that sugary drinks really have no redeeming value. They basically just provide sugar and calories and nothing else. We know that they're a big part of the added sugar consumption in Australia and indeed around the world, and they're a direct cause of obesity, diabetes, and all the downstream health consequences of that.
Sure, they have no nutritional value, but aren't they a pleasure to which people are entitled to indulge?
People can, of course, choose to do whatever they want, drink whatever they want, eat whatever they want. But people like to think they're better judges and they have more free will than probably they do. I mean, the reason why food and beverage companies spend so much money advertising is because they know they can get you to do things that they want you to do that you actually might not want to do. So this whole idea that people are making free choices when they choose to drink sugary drinks or eat sugary foods, it's really a bit of a fallacy. What they're really doing is what the food companies want them to do to maximize their profits.
Are we not picking, though, on one pleasure that perhaps a lot of lower income people enjoy?
So I think another key issue and another reason why sugary drinks are a particular target is that they're not really a treat food. I mean, people do have pleasures and they do treat themselves to occasional things. But one of the things about sugary drinks is that they're just part of the routine. Everyone drinks them all the time. And as you point out, it is particularly lower income, less well-off communities who tend to consume more of them and they get more adverse effects. Now, that does mean that if a tax on sugary drinks was introduced, then they would be impacted to a greater extent. But they would also get hugely more benefits than the latte set would as well. And if you actually do the mathematics, what you find is that the difference in the sort of the cash impost between higher income groups and lower income groups would only be a few dollars or a few tens of dollars each year. So we're not talking about a massive amount of money.
But let me put to you what David Gillespie, who's the assistant health minister, said. Taxes will only make people angry and it won't change what they eat. This is the man who's in charge or one of those responsible for making policy that you've got to persuade. He's saying you're just going to rile people up and they're just going to pay more but ignore your warnings.
So one of the joys of working in a global health research institute is I don't just have to think about Australia. That said, that is a particular view, but I would take issue with aspects of it. So first of all, we know that taxes do actually change what people consume. In terms of a sugar tax, we've seen data from Mexico that are really very compelling. They put the price of sugary drinks up by about 10% and they reduced sales of sugary drinks by about 7.5%. If we think to a related area, another harmful commodity purveyed by industry is tobacco. And here in Australia, we put enormous taxes on tobacco and we have some of the lowest smoking rates in the world. And there is a direct relationship between how much we tax and what consumption is. Mm. So I'm not especially positive about us getting a sugar tax or a soda tax up in Australia in the near future. But there are 25 countries around the world that are already doing it. They're going to get benefits from it. And sooner or later, it's something we'll be able to have a sensible conversation about in Australia.
I suppose it comes down to this fundamental question, doesn't it, Bruce? Who pays? For example, my bad choices. Once a week, I go and eat a very large slice of Black Forest cake. Now, I know what I'm doing. But I guess who should pay ultimately for that choice that I've made? Should I pay a higher tax that can be put back into the public health system? Should the manufacturer? Should the retailer?
It's a very difficult question. And I think the issue of who pays is a big part of the reason why we don't see more action from government around prevention. So the effect of a tax on sugar would be to reduce the risk of chronic disease in lots of people. But what you wouldn't see is immediate reductions in the numbers of people going to hospital. And in fact, if people don't go to hospital, you don't notice it. Mm. And this makes it rather a hard sell. Plus the fact that many of of the benefits that you would see from implementing a sugar tax now would not occur for 5, 10, 15, 50 years down the track. And those sorts of time horizons are just beyond the capacity of governments, who really have to take the lead here, to effectively sort of integrate into the political cycle.
But just, you know, in a sense, putting it back on the consumer, I can see the case that if I went and ate Black Forest cake 5 days a week and developed a very severe case of diabetes and then fell into the care of the public hospital system, someone's going to have to pay to subsidise my care for something that I have consciously done.
They are. I think tying your particular individual behaviours to your health outcomes is always going to be a very difficult thing to do and really practically impossible. Again, the idea behind a sugar tax or a soda tax is that it's a solution that is sort of reasonable. I mean, we know that if you drink more soda, you're more likely to get obese, you're more likely to get diabetes. We also know that it's very hard to tie those associations down at an individual level, but we also know that it would be pretty easy to implement a soda tax. I mean, we could probably do it through the same sorts of mechanisms we have in place for GST, for example. So all of these things are a pragmatic compromise between what might be the most just and the most ideal way of doing things versus what might be plausible.
Beyond the question of a soda tax or mandated reductions in sugar in sodas, which is your latest proposal, let me ask you about the ethics of an industry that, if not in an outright act of deception, then rather sneakily puts sugar into foods that we don't normally perceive as having sugar, such as bread. Do we have companies are acting unethically in this way?
So I don't think the companies are acting in any way or mostly not acting unethically. Companies are set up to make money, to maximise shareholder value, and they're required to do that by all means within the law. Frankly, if I was in charge of a soda company, I'd probably be doing many of the things that the soda companies are doing. What we have to have is an environment that allows consumers to choose wisely and that constrains the companies in an appropriate way. And again, if we look to tobacco and alcohol, we start to see this. We see society saying, government, we actually want you to control what these companies do, how they can behave, because we can see that it's good for us. Mm-hmm. I just don't think we've got there with food at the moment. And so we have a food industry that really does, runs a little bit riot.
Professor Bruce Neal of the George Institute for Global Health, thanks for being with us on the program. So how would a sugar tax affect consumers, especially those on low incomes, who, as you heard Bruce say, do consume more soft drink? Dr. Jenny Mayer's a long-time GP in Tamworth, up in northwestern New South Wales. Earlier this year, the Australian Health Policy Collaboration found Tamworth to be the fattest town in Australia. Almost 80% of adults are overweight. And Jenny May joins us now. Jenny, welcome.
Thank you.
We think of Tamworth as being, you know, a thriving centre in the middle of country New South Wales, full of people doing manual jobs, heavy work. Did it surprise you to hear that it had the biggest obesity problem of any town in Australia?
Yes, look, I did find it surprising because although obesity is a phenomenon that I see in my daily walk when I go to the supermarket, when I meet people in the main street, I hadn't thought that it was dissimilar to other places in New South Wales, and I didn't think it was dissimilar to some of our smaller towns, which also battle, I believe, the obesity epidemic. So it was some surprise to see us figure so highly, and I guess that set off some alarm bells in general practice and in the health professions to wonder just why that was.
I mean, what sort of conditions do you treat patients for that you can now see are obesity related?
Well, it's very obvious to those of us who've been practicing for more than 5 to 10 years that obesity is contributing to an increased burden of cardiovascular disease, and we're seeing that translated very much through the incidence of diabetes, but also it's impacting on things like chronic obstructive pulmonary airways disease, on arthritis, and there are other conditions that obviously obesity works with to reduce people's level of health.
So if people, though, in Tamworth and the area around it are doing a lot of heavy manual work, Why then are they fat?
I looked around and I thought about that, and what I realised was that firstly, farming is not as active perhaps as it used to be, and many of our farmers spend large portions of time, for instance, in air-conditioned cabins harvesting large paddocks, and that's on the basis of mechanisation. And secondly, in towns like Tamworth and Dubbo and Orange and Albury and similar, a large proportion of the population that is, you know, in the working demographic are probably involved in service industries as much as they are in active farming. So there has to be something else that's going on that's contributing to our overweight and obesity issue other than simply, you know, the level of physical activity or not. So your comment about food, I think, is correct, because when I looked around and thought about it, what I realised that is that in Tamworth, not only do you have overweight and obesity, but you do have evidence that we have insufficient physical activity, and climate contributes to that. It gets very hot in Tamworth for a large portion of the year, and it is difficult to exercise outside when it is very hot. We've got high rates of tobacco smoking. We've got high levels of socioeconomic disadvantage. But also, and probably more importantly, we have very easy access to energy-dense, non-nutritional foods. So we've got high levels of access to fast food. And that is probably where we differ from some of our smaller towns, which may have the same other demographics, but don't have this easy access to fast food.
So what do your patients tell you, Jenny, about their lifestyles and the reasons for eating what they do?
So they talk to me about cost. They talk to me about pattern and perception. So there is no doubt that eating nutritional food is costly, and it is much cheaper to eat white bread and buy chips. And we know that. And unfortunately, over time, where socioeconomic factors are important, so the cost of food is important, then patterns may be developed, and potentially over generations, of having diets that are very high in energy-dense foods. So if we couple that with high availability of those sorts of foods, and we associate it with low levels of physical activity, it's not surprising that we're seeing an increase in obesity.
Yes, one of your colleagues, who's a clinical nurse consultant, Matt Crawford, who specialises in this area, recently told the local paper, patients often tell me it's all well and good for them to be recommended what to eat, but as far as affordability is concerned, it's prohibitive.
I would agree with that. And access to good nutritional food is much more difficult than access to fast, cheap, energy-dense food. I mean, that's how we're thinking as a community. And I think we're starting to move from blaming the victim and going, well, it's people's fault that they're obese, and starting to think about what community-level interventions that we can think about that might change the situation. And I think the other thing that we've realised is that there is a link between obesity and food insecurity. So if people are not sure that they can get access to good food, then they will eat and their patterns of eating will be different to those that have that assurance.
Do your patients want someone in the government basically to step in and, if not tell them what to eat, then try to shape or influence their diet?
Look, some patients do, but many of my patients don't. So, as I said, free will, choice, opportunity, options seems to me to be a better carrot as a way forward than a stick. Now, as I said, I would support a sugar tax. I think that energy-dense food is too cheap and that it would be good to change the equation towards more nutritional food opportunities. But cost remains an important issue.
Assuming we imposed a sugar tax, is it, I mean, and that is sort of a big government measure, could we then say the proceeds of that sugar tax could maybe subsidise, especially in areas where the transport costs of getting healthy food there are great, subsidise healthier foods?
Andrew, you're speaking my language. I like it, all right? I like that concept of equity of access. Now, obviously, the food market will bring the cheapest available foods that are most easy to access to various markets. But I do believe that unless we alter the availability of nutritionally advantageous foods, that people will continue to make choices for poorer foods.
Well, good to talk to you. Dr. Jenny May is a local GP in Tamworth. She's also the head of rural health at the University of Newcastle. Thanks for being with us.
Our pleasure, Andrew.